Hello and welcome to another episode of Cartoon Time Machine. I'm Scarlett.
And I'm Katie.
We're your animates, and today we are once again going to infinity and beyond as we talk about the new movie Lightyear. Yeah, our Cartoon Time Machine is parked firmly in the present, which is rare for us, as we're talking about a recent movie, which is currently in theaters. Both of us saw Lightyear earlier this week, and we wanted to take the time and the opportunity to give our thoughts on Pixar's latest film. As always, we'll start with sort of a spoiler-free section, give our general thoughts on the film, general recommendation, whether or not we think it's, you know, who should see it. And then we'll get into a more spoiler zone. But before we go into even that, a brief synopsis, as it were, for those of you who are not familiar with this film, which would be impressive given how much marketing went into this and how it was just everywhere for the past several months. But this is a spin-off of the Toy Story franchise, starring everyone's favorite Space Ranger, Buzz Lightyear, this time voiced by Chris Evans instead of Tim Allen, as he was voiced in the original Toy Story films. And that's because this is not the toy Buzz Lightyear, who we all know and love from the original films, but rather this movie is the in-universe movie that the child Andy watched in 1995, which inspired him to ask his parents to buy him a Buzz Lightyear toy, which in turn sparked the entire Toy Story franchise. So I guess we could say this is a prequel of sorts. I don't know if it's fair to call it a prequel. It's weird, right?
It's a prequel and yet not a prequel. You are correct. It is very odd to describe how it sits, but yeah.
I mean, I don't know if there's been movies like this really before that are like in-universe movie. I mean, the only other thing, honestly, that I can think of that is this, is what we just talked about a few weeks ago, is the Buzz Lightyear Star Command series, which in its conceit is the TV show that's watched in the Toy Story universe, which I think is now non-canon. I don't know if it's still considered canon that there is a cartoon version of it. Judging by this movie, I would say not, because it feels like this movie would not spin off into the TV show that Buzz Lightyear of Star Command is. If we're thinking in-universe, like, in-universe, the people who made the movie Lightyear would not then spin it off into Buzz Lightyear of Star Command, because, like, they're just, like, the characters are entirely different. The villains are entirely different. Like, I don't... Maybe the marketing execs in the Toy Story universe are just worse than they are in our real world and would do something so ridiculous as to spin off their... And I assume in-universe, Lightyear is considered live action, right? Like... It's also weird to think about, considering how weird Andy looked in 1995 as a human character designed by Pixar.
Yeah, and like, I have feelings about the animation.
Which I'm sure we'll go into that in a bit. I'm just having a very funny mental image of, like, the movie theater in-universe that is showing Lightyear, and, like, on the screen we have these beautiful, super realistic, possibly too realistic 2022 CGI, but then the entire audience of children is the horrifying 1995 animated children.
You just
can't look at them too long because it ruins your brain, and, like, your brain is telling you, like, this is an alien creature that will kill you if you, like, stay in its vicinity. Yeah, it's a funny thought to think about, like, this is, like, live action in their world. But I don't think that, you know, affects anything. What are your general thoughts on the film, Kate? I know you've already alluded to your thoughts on the animation.
My hot take is I think I enjoyed Buzz Lightyear Space Command movie better.
Ooh, that is a spicy take.
My general thought is the cinematography, like, the animation cinematography is really pretty and really good. Sometimes a little off-putting how realistic it looks. I think the story's kind of boring.
I think that's fair. I think that's really fair to say.
I think it's a boring movie, and I wouldn't watch it again, really.
You know, I was thinking of that too, because I think that is very often a metric of the quality of a movie is whether you would rewatch. And I think most Pixar movies are very rewarding on rewatch. Some of them, I would
Absolutely.
argue, watching a second time is even better. Like I always think about Coco as an example of that, because the first time you watch, like you're just sort of blown away by what you're seeing in the world of the Land of the Dead. But then on rewatch, when you've like sort of already absorbed the story and the mystery and all those things that you're paying attention to on the first watch, like you can just look in the background and like see all the amazing visuals that the team has put in there. But I think I'm kind of with you, Katie. I don't really know if I would rewatch Lightyear. I don't know if there's really anything there. That I couldn't enjoy on the first
Yeah.
viewing.
I feel like we might get more into it in spoiler
Of
when
course,
we
yeah. Well,
talk
we're
in the
just very
spoiler stuff,
different.
but overall, yeah, I'd say the story's kind of lackluster. I think my biggest praise for it is the voice acting cast they picked. I think for the most part, I really enjoyed everyone. Chris Evans was a great pick to take over the voice. Well, not take over the voice because this is a different Buzz, but I think he really fit the character really well. Kiki Palmer was really good. I think the only voice that I didn't love was Taika.
I was gonna
It was
say, it's a
I was
weirdly
too
subdued
much.
Taika performance.
It was almost too much for the movie it was trying to. Like, the movie is very serious, and Taika comes in with a very fun comedy that I don't know if
He does,
he
but I feel
meshes
like
with
they're
the
ramping him
rest.
down. I think animation might not be tight, might not benefit Taika Waititi as
No.
brilliant a performer as he is. I think animation is by its nature very limiting for an actor because you have to, you know, kind of match the animation. And obviously you can do all kinds of improv in the booth and it will can then be reflected in. But Taika is I feel like is such a heavy improviser and such a physical, visceral voice actor. But then again, he was great as Korg. So maybe I'm being hard on him when I should be more hard on the animation team not properly capturing him.
But even with that I don't know if he's in this, like, does any of the acting for Korg, if it, or if he's just the voice.
Oh no,
But I
he does the
think,
mocap. He does the
yeah, that's
mocap
what
too.
I think that
Yeah.
helps. Like, his
I agree,
movement
yeah.
and stuff is captured, where we know in Lightyear, I would guarantee it's not his, any of his model being used, like,
Yeah,
in
I mean,
terms
I
of
know they
how he would
do.
move.
I think Pixar frequently films their voice actors as they're working and can incorporate some of the performance, but Pixar doesn't really, you know, they're not Polar Expressing it. They're
No,
not
there's
doing
no mocap, but they will use recorded reference
It's reference, exactly. So it's never
to
going to
build the
capture
movement
the
on
full
top.
performance. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the only voice I didn't click with. I think otherwise there were some really good voice performances.
I agree. I think there's definitely been some backlash to Chris Evans as Tim Allen as Lightyear because Tim Allen is, you know, sort of the more iconic one. But I think it would have been I think Minute Tim Allen would have made it feel cheaper, and it already feels a little bit cheap to be fair. Not in terms of the production quality, which is fantastic. I more mean in terms of like this is just here as a marketing gimmick, and we know we can get like fans of the franchise in. I think it helps to separate it as like this is its own entity. This isn't the toy. And I think, you know, to be fair, if you're a big enough celebrity, you don't voice your own toys. Like, you know, I don't think necessarily that Captain America toys currently use Chris Evans's voice. So I'm not surprised. Like, my in-universe logic doesn't bump on it being Chris Evans's voice versus Tim Allen's.
Your in-universe idea makes it actually a great thing to think about. And I think we talked about it in the previous episode that Chris Evans can play a really good straight man,
Yeah,
such as
he's great
Captain
at playing.
America. And there were definitely hits of Captain America in there, but it really worked. I think his performance was very good.
He has an earnestness to him that I think can make a character who might otherwise come across as, you know, really boring and really straight-laced and dull. I think that he has an earnestness to his performance, both in live action and in animation, that makes him seem much more sincere, and that makes you care about him. And in this movie, he does some very questionable things, and he acts in a way that I think it would be very easy for him to come across as unlikable or as a jerk. And I think the nature of Chris Evans's performance really helps sell him as a good guy who is trying his best and is just not, you know, hasn't quite figured out what he's doing is kind of wrong. And I do credit Chris Evans with making that work. And I think they definitely made a wise casting choice there. I don't know if Tim Allen could have pulled that off anymore. Maybe he could have, you know, 20 years ago, but I don't know if that's in his range at the moment. If it ever was. I mean, this is the Chris Evans has to do in this movie is very different from what Buzz Lightyear had to do in the first few Toy Story movies. So I think it was probably for the best. I don't know if it was ever an option on the table to make it Tim Allen, or from the get-go they knew they were going with another actor, but either way, I think it was the correct call in this moment. There was another character in this movie that we will discuss in the spoiler section that I think should have been voiced by Tim Allen, which we will discuss, which would have, I think, been a very good casting choice,
Would
but
have been hilarious.
we will go into that in the spoiler section, for everyone who hasn't seen it. Yeah,
Other
I think
things.
my general,
Oh,
sorry.
go ahead. I was gonna
I
say
was
go
gonna
ahead.
give my I was gonna give my general thoughts, I think are similar to yours. I think visually it is outstanding. I mean, it is par for the course for Pixar. I will say I don't think there is any, you know, it's not like something, there was never a moment like in Coco, for example, where I was just blown away by the creativity. I think it is much more technically impressive in that there are many shots that just look like a live action, very impressive sci-fi movie, with all of its charm, with all the textures. Sometimes, like you mentioned, it might just be a little bit too realistic. It's messing a little bit with my brain with the photorealism in some aspects. But I think that is very impressive. You know, I want to give props where props are due to Pixar, as always, for continuing to innovate and expand what animation is capable of. So kudos to them, as always. I'm with you. I think the story is a little bit boring. There were definite moments where I was like, oh my God, this movie is so short, but like I'm definitely getting bored in ways that I'm not usually with Pixar movies. Really, it's only that like lower tier of Pixar films that I can say I'm ever really bored in. And I think this unfortunately falls in that category of having some scenes that really drag. There, Socks the cat is a standout character. I laughed whenever he said anything. Thank goodness,
Yes.
because the rest of the movie, I think, is really devoid of comedy. I was sort of expecting that going in, but they're really banking on Socks being the comedy because the rest of the movie is very serious and somber and action heavy, and that's kind of a shame. So
If
yeah,
I
I
had a
think.
nickel for every space-related movie in which a ginger cat was my favorite character, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it's odd that it's happened twice.
Wait, what's the other one? Am I
Captain
blanking?
Marvel and Goose.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. How could I forget? Yes, Goose. You're not wrong.
I have a
Yeah, I think
poster of Goose specifically from Captain Marvel because the cat got me.
the Goose is great. We love Goose. We stand Goose in this house. Yeah, I think in general the story, I think, could have been a lot more engaging. I think they had some really interesting ideas. I think the characters were pretty underdeveloped. I think there's, you sort of have like your scrappy ragtag team of underdogs that has to come together to save the day. And they're kind of just your standard scrappy, you know, ragtag team. They're not really given a lot of development, which is a shame because Pixar is usually
There's
really good at taking side characters and like giving them a lot of depth.
so little compelling me to care about this ragtime. We'll get into it more.
We'll get into it more.
My 2 points following up on you is one, I believe one is a negative, one is a, well, one's not a negative. It's a hypothetical, and one is a good thing. The first is with the animation because we've gone on. I think we have to talk about it. Do you feel this had to be an animated movie? Or could this have been done live action? And I think there are a couple points where animation definitely made it easier.
But we've seen like Interstellar and Gravity do things that are similar to this film that at some points I was watching and I was like, this doesn't feel like it needed to be animated.
I think as a whole, I think, you know, when I say, and I've said this several times, you've mentioned it too, when I say I really like animated movies to need to be animated, I want to clarify that I'm not talking about like specific set pieces, because there's hijinks in here, shall we say, that I think could not be done in an identical manner in a live action movie. And I think, and a, you know, a live action beat couldn't necessarily be done in an identical manner in animation. That's not really what I mean. You know, it's not, there are lots of animated movies that, for example, you know, have no fantastical elements necessarily that, you know, you could have been done in live action, but be, you know, be otherwise stylistically, it requires it. But yeah, when I say that an animated movie should feel like it needs to be animated, I really don't mean that there are specific set pieces, that there are specific sequences that can't be done in an identical manner in live action versus animation. Because there are certainly, you know, slapstick sequences in this movie that you couldn't shoot in the exact same way in live action. But I would say largely in terms of the storytelling, in terms of the characters, in terms of just the plot, no, I don't think there's really anything here that required it to be animated. I think that they did not perhaps use the medium to its full advantage. For example, they're pretty much entirely terrestrial in this movie. They're on one planet with very little change in scenery. They're on a spaceship at one point, but in general, they are mostly in the same location. And animation would be a really great opportunity to explore many different worlds, to have that intricacy in the backgrounds that you can have in a movie like Coco or Zootopia or Inside Out. Then, and in the upcoming Disney movie, Strange World, it looks like they're really taking advantage of the kind of incredible landscapes that you can create. But they're on like a very barren planet with very standard aliens. Like there's something about the aliens that they're fighting or the robots they're fighting that couldn't be done with CG visual effects. You know, I was disappointed. Like they're fighting like vine monsters and giant like spider flies, basically. Kind of disappointed in Pixar. Like, you know, for the, these are the, the this is the studio that's given us some of the most impressive character designs of any animation studio. And I'm a little disappointed that when it came to creating a hostile alien planet, this barren wasteland with living vines was kind of the best they could do.
Yeah, it's almost, yeah, a little disappointing to think about in retrospect that it is a pretty boring planet and we see so few extraterrestrial creatures that are not just bugs.
And I wouldn't necessarily mind so much if one of two things happened. If one, they were traveling to a bunch of different worlds, in which case I wouldn't need one planet to be particularly fantastic. Or, and this will, I'll talk about more in the spoiler section, if they didn't make such a big deal out of the importance of this planet. Like this planet means something in terms of the plot. Like there is a large chunk of the plot that revolves around we as the audience feeling a certain kind of way about this planet. Again, I'll go into more detail later, but it is a little disappointing that despite the fact that it was plot relevant, I don't feel anything for this planet. Like Pixar again usually does a very good job of making us feel for a place. Like I don't like the Cars movies really that much. But you like Radiator Springs. Like Radiator Springs as a location is almost a character. The destroyed Earth in WALL-E, again, it makes you feel it, you don't like it, but it makes you feel a way. The house in Up is absolutely a character. It
Oh,
is
yeah.
completely representative of Ellie and Carl's life with her. Like, it doesn't, not every location needs to be that. But when it is such a central part of your story, as it is in this case, it does feel like a real wasted opportunity that it's just a planet. Like It's a planet like every other planet we've seen characters stranded on in every sci-fi movie we've ever watched. It might as well just be like the desert in California that they use to film every Star Trek episode in. And it doesn't need to be because it's animation. Like that sort of, I guess, goes back to that point about animation. It doesn't need, you're not limited by what locations you can find. You're not limited by whether or not you get to use Disney's fancy volume that they shoot all their Star Wars movies on. Like you have, there are no limits to how cool they can make this planet. And it's just kind of a planet. So yeah, I would say if that's our test of, you know, not every animated movie necessarily needs to adhere to that rule. But it's much harder to be a good animated movie if you can't.
And I guess if it to give it to give the devil's advocate argument is for what we were talking about before, we were it's unclear if this is in because this is an in-universe movie we are watching, and it's unclear if it was a in an animated movie or a live action movie. If it was a live action movie, I can understand why, but maybe that should have been set up better, because otherwise it does just feel a little disappointing.
The way I feel about it is if they could go one of two ways on this, and I think they kind of only did a halfway. I think they could have either leaned way harder into it being we are making this the 1995 movie that inspired the Toy Story franchise, and you know, and by Toy Story franchise I mean inspires all the adventures that we see in universe in Toy Story. They inspired the character of Buzz Lightyear and our human characters' love for him. And in order to do that, I think they would need to tie much more closely to either the lore that they've already created in a show like Buzz Lightyear of Star Command, or just what we glean from the movies. Like, for example, the little green men don't show up at all in this.
Upsetting.
I was disappointed by that because from the Toy Story movies, we know they are part of the lore. So that's kind of a shame. Are they? I think they are, right?
They are. Well,
Yeah.
now I was trying to design an in-universe how could this movie spin off, but I can't talk about it in this section of the podcast.
Yeah, we'll go into it again once we hit our next section, which we will be doing shortly. But yeah, so they could have leaned harder into it. I think that could have also included making it kind of a 90s disaster movie, which is again kind of like if you're trying to pull in that audience nostalgia, like I don't know, like I don't think this movie was really meant for the youngest people in the audience. I think my crowd was pretty restless. I don't, you know, it is definitely
Same.
one of the older tier Pixar movies, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But if they were leaning hard into getting the 90s kids who loved Toy Story in 1995 and us early 2000s kids who also grew up with it, like make it a 90s style movie. Like if that's what you're leaning into, make it that. Make it, you know, feel like Stargate. Make it feel like Independence Day. Like there's so many tropes from that time period. From I mean, heck, sci-fi was kind of in a renaissance in the 90s. That's when Star
Yeah.
Trek: The Next Generation was coming out. The Star Wars prequels were about to come out. Like there's a genuine history there of sci-fi in the 1990s that they could have absolutely drawn on to make it feel like, yeah, this is the kind of movie that a boy would watch in 1995. But instead, it feels more like Interstellar. It feels more like Gravity or The Martian. It feels like the kind of PG-13 live action movie that would come out around this time. And I don't think that's not inherently a bad thing. But that does then limit them to telling it as a, you know, a more succinct modern type story with a modern type plot. And it prevents them from having the kind of fun with it that they might have been able to have if they had gone the we're trying to make it be like the movie Andy would have fallen in love with. And as a result, I don't think this is the kind of movie that I can buy 8-year-old Andy falling in
No.
love with so much he would buy a Buzz Lightyear toy. I mean,
No.
maybe he'd buy a socks
I
toy. I
gotta
mean, I want to buy a socks toy, but I don't
Yeah,
really
I
see him
have
buying.
a real feeling about that when it comes to a twist in the film. But the point I wanted to draw off on first is your note about the audience and like the kind of missing, I think, the audience. When I went to the theater, I went at an off time. I went to see an 11:50 showing on a Monday.
So
The
you
Monday
went, wait,
after
11:50 in the afternoon or 11:50 at night?
11:50 in the morning.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, like, you had no children in your audience then, I assume, at your midnight screening of Lightyear.
I went to 11:50 on a Monday. It's a holiday, day after Father's Day. It was Juneteenth. A lot of people have work off. Kids aren't in school.
Right.
I was in the it was the IMAX theater. Spent way too much money on this film. It was $22.
Why?
Because I thought it was a good film to see in IMAX, and it was technically beautiful. There were maybe 10 of us in the audience.
Oh, wow.
And that's not
For
a
IMAX
bad
theater,
time
that's
to
bad.
see a movie also when kids are out of
Yeah.
school. And there were other kids coming into the theater who were buying tickets to Top Gun.
That, I mean, Nevin.
And the only thing I wanted to bring up with that is I pulled up the box office to see how it was doing in its first week. This movie cost 200 million, I believe, to make at least.
Yeah.
In the first week, and it's only the first week, mind it to people.
Yes.
They're only at 110 worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, with the marketing budget that this movie likely had, given how much it was everywhere, and the marketing budget that Pixar usually gets, I would say it would be difficult for this movie to break even. Not impossible, but it also hasn't
It's
had
gonna
a
be
major
tough.
word of mouth.
No.
So I don't think it's like, I
The
don't think weekend over weekend it's going to increase necessarily. And in a week, Minions comes out, and that's going to decimate everything. Like,
Yeah,
no child is
Minions
going to
is
go see
gonna.
Lightyear. When Minions is in theaters, whether we like it or not, yeah, I mean, I know you and I feel a certain kind of way about
We
Minions,
will
but
not be reviewing this movie. If someone wants to review this movie, it's
our
on them.
producer and my boyfriend are going to go see it, so
I
we might
know.
bring them
Here's the
on
thing.
to review
Neither of
it.
them listen to this podcast.
My boyfriend listens to this podcast.
Oh, I thought you meant producer. It's boyfriend.
Oh no, producer's boyfriend is coming with me to see Jurassic Park.
But the
We're
point
doing a
here's my
swap, but yes,
I
though, no, it's
the
not.
Saturday after it opened, it only made 16 million domestic on a Saturday opening.
And
That's bad.
I blame the marketing of this movie for as widespread as it was. Everything about the marketing of this movie said this is meant for adults who are a little bit nostalgic for Toy Story. I don't think this movie, I don't think the trailer screamed, parents, take your young children to this movie. I don't think
No.
kids watching the trailer, I mean, the first teaser trailer had no jokes in it. Like, it was just a dramatic trailer of Buzz Lightyear, and I
Yeah.
don't think that would
And
drag. I don't think that would pull children.
yeah. And I think their mistake in that is parents are more likely to take kids to see a movie and take usually there are multiple kids going at the same time. And kids, if it's marketed towards kids, doesn't matter the quality as much. And they're not gonna talk word of mouth, they're gonna talk about, oh, I saw this cool space movie with my friends. Their word of mouth is easier to deal with. Our generation, who is a lot of the kids who grew up on Toy Story, do things like this and talk about the film. And like,
Right.
I've already had multiple friends ask me, what did you think about the movie? Should we see it? My response was, yes,
Yeah,
it's
my
okay.
I would say for anyone who is a Pixar completionist, definitely see this movie. It is not the Cars movies. It is not
No.
the Good Dinosaur. It is not the worst that Pixar has created.
No.
It is okay. It is a mediocre movie that if it was put out by any other studio, we'd be saying, this is pretty good. I don't think it would blow anyone's mind if it came out, from someone, DreamWorks or Illumination or something like that. It's pretty good. I would say if I wouldn't, rush to the theater. It looks good on the big screen. So, if you're thinking, should I see it on the big screen or wait till Disney Plus? I'd say see it on the big screen. I
Yeah,
think you'll
unless
be
you
more
have a
grounded.
really nice TV, like this
Don't
would be
watch
a
it on like the
great
TV I
no, this would be a great movie to watch on like a 50 to 70 inch 4K TV.
That's
Like,
fair.
don't do 8K. 8K's dumb. We can't see an 8K. I don't understand why we made 8K TVs.
I'm gonna take your word for it. I don't know any of this
They
stuff.
shouldn't be improving the pixel size. We should be working on improving the color space. I got a lot of
Again,
feelings on technology.
We'll take your word for it. Seems like you have a
It's
lot of feelings about this
scientific. We can't really see anything above, like, 6K is about where our vision goes. I don't see a difference anymore.
one.
Moving on. I had some feelings.
Point is, yes, if you, I think I will still recommend this movie. I think, yeah. You know, I'm sure it's better than what Minions is going to be. So, like, it's
yeah,
a
if
little
you
bit
have,
of shame that I'm sure Minions will outperform it by great margins.
If you have time to kill and you want to go see a movie in the theater because you're like, you know, I haven't gone in a while, out of the movies in the theater right now, it's probably the one I would recommend between this and Top Gun if you like Top Gun action movies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you on that because I didn't like Top Gun as much as most people did.
Exactly. I haven't seen Top Gun. I have been recommended to see it solely from like, it looks really well shot. That is the only reason people told me to see it.
You should see it given
which
your,
is the, a very system. Similar reason I would say to see Lightyear. It is visually impressive. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's. I think people don't often give cinematography and animation credit because they're virtual cameras and not literal cameras. But beautiful cinematography. I mean, the shot composition was stunning in this. Like,
it is very good. And the other props, I think Giacchino made a good score as well still.
Yeah,
I don't think
I
his top score, he's done very incredible scores. But it
literally incredible scores.
Yeah. But, like, he's a brilliant composer. I think it fits the tone of the movie very well. I enjoyed the music and sound editing of the film.
I think on every technical level, this movie did very well. I think it just, there was nothing mind-blowing. I think more just on the creative side. I think things like, you know, world exploration, characters, plot, you know, the big things.
The things that tend
to matter a lot, I think were the weak points. On a technical level, stunning. It was exactly what you want from Pixar. Like, yes,
Pixar
looks fantastic. You're in for a visual treat.
Pixar has showed us what animation is very capable of. I gotta say, in some ways, I don't love if this is the way that all animation goes, this very realistic style.
We've been over this. Yeah, this is. And,
but
and I think
some of my favorite Pixar things are the ones where they go fantastical, magical, like that's, and like animation doesn't have to be that, but there's some fantasy dream-like aspect that animation so often captures that I think is one of the most beautiful points of animation, that this is missing fantasy dream-like. It is very much realism.
Well, I think in that case, I think a movie like Brave, I think, is one of those that is impressive to me in how it makes a realistic landscape still feel fantastical. I mean, again, it's back to that what I was saying before about having it be a location that makes you understand why a character loves it. When you have the touch the sky sequence in Brave, and Merida is riding and shooting through the woods and climbing up that mountain. It's just woods and it's just a mountain, but the way they animate it and the way they animate her interactions with it, you know, it makes you feel like you're in a fantasy world, even if you're not actually seeing anything fantastical. Mm-hmm. And I
up,
agree. I think
also,
Up 100%.
Is a realistic world that then goes into a foreign fantastical location that's in the real world. That, you know, that's another one where it's like, I like this, how this does it more. Like, I can think of other realistic films that have, films based on realism that use their fantastical animation styles to make a point.
It's stylization, I think, is what we're looking for. Is some stylization that, I think the stylization that Lightyear was going for is, how much like a live action movie can we make an animated movie? And if that was the thought experiment, if that's what they were going for, cool. Like, you guys did great at that. Like, you absolutely have convinced me that Pixar can run every live action studio out of business if they truly wanted. You guys can make the next Interstellar. Cool. However, I don't think they're playing to their company's strong suits. And I think they only need to look at how Turning Red did in comparison to Lightyear. Now, obviously,
oh,
the apples and oranges, one was on Disney Plus, one was in theaters. But if I recall correctly, Turning Red had posted the best opening that Disney Plus had ever seen. They had stupid amounts of clicks, and it was huge in the conversation versus Lightyear, which I think is being really, it's completely overshadowed by Top Gun, which came out almost a month beforehand. It's being overshadowed by Minions coming out. It was beaten by Jurassic Park in its second weekend at the box office. I think had they put Turning Red in theaters, I think Turning Red would have performed much better. And shame on Disney for not having faith in girls' movies, but that's a different issue. But okay. And it was a much better movie.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've torn apart as much as we can before
without
we...
Without going into spoilers.
Going into spoilers, I think this is a good point to go and tear into the story a little bit more.
All right, audience, if you do not want spoilers, stop the podcast now. If you want spoilers, here we are, spoiler zone.
I don't know why you want the spoilers. It's an okay movie.
Do the spoiler zone.
Okay. So when do we get this as a ringtone?
I'll just like sing it into your phone. I don't know. Do phones still do custom ringtones? I don't know. I've had my phone on vibrate for like so long. I forgot what my ringtone actually is.
I don't know. We can do custom alarms though.
Oh, I haven't tried that. I should do that. Not
important. Yeah, that's how I wake up to music instead of other things.
All right, Katie, why don't you give us your spoiler heavy review and your thoughts?
I think my biggest thought about the story is I hate the twist.
Interesting. Tell me more.
I hate the twist with Zurg in the end. I think Zurg is such a good fantasy. That's not the word I want. Cartoon villain. That's what he always was. He was a great cartoon villain.
He's Darth Vader, but a cartoon.
And I feel like the twist cheapened like my feelings of Zurg, like in that twist especially is what makes me go, would an 8-year-old Andy like this movie? And I think the answer is no.
Imagine a kid buying we're in the spoiler zone now, so I guess I'll just say it. I can't imagine a kid buying a Zurg toy and it being like, yup, this is old Buzz Lightyear in there, like that. No kid would buy that. No, kids hate old people.
Yeah, the fact that it is we got into weird convoluted time travel mechanics that were...
Oh, no child is going to understand that because I barely understood it.
We don't understand because they made zero sense. It was suddenly put into the world, barely explained. I think a poor design to get out of a movie ending that didn't have a true ending. They were like, well, we need Zurg to show up. What should we do with Zurg? It was always just, has been a terrifying villain behind the mask.
And, I mean, importantly, the only thing we know about Zurg is that he's Buzz Lightyear's father. Like, that's what bugged me the most, is that they were going through all this effort to, like, try to make this, like, completely unrelated sci-fi story still feel like it's somehow related to Buzz Lightyear, and they couldn't even figure out a way to like make Zurg Buzz's father. Like, that's canon, and this might just be me being the person who like loves Toy Story 2 more than the other Toy Story movies and is just like a little bit obsessive with proving that Toy Story 2 is the best one, but like that was an iconic and incredible moment in Toy Story 2.
Yes. You are correct, by the way. Toy Story 2 is the best Toy Story.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But like the moment where we have the Luke, I am your father scene with Zurg and Buzz, big dramatic thing, and then they play catch together at the end. Like, that's iconic to me. Like, if their goal, like, I don't know what their goal was here. Like, if their goal was to like get all the people who are hardcore nostalgic for the franchise, like, slam dunk for me would be finding a way to make it Buzz's father. Like, if they were, like you said, they introduced time travel in a really dumb, convoluted way at the very last minute of this movie, and it's like, they just throw it out there. Like, they don't, this isn't foreshadowed that time travel is a thing. We have space relativity, but like, they just sort of yada, yada, yada it. They're like, oh, well, since I could go forward in time, maybe I could go backwards in time.
Exactly. It's like trying to use hyperspace as an excuse. A big part of the story is hyperspace, because you are going so fast, everything else, like time slows down for you, which I believe is a general thought process with how hyper travel would work if it was theoretically capable. Great.
I think
semi-grounded in reality.
Yeah, I bought
that. And then at some point it became, like, he jumps in and it's like, I'm you from a 50 years forward. It's not even like alternate timelines, really. And then he was like, I figured out I could jump back in time with hyperspace. Very little explanation. Now I'm here and I'm a little evil. Also, I just found these robots sitting on the side of the road.
The stuff in the future. Like,
they can't say Buzz, so they just say Zurg, which made no sense.
Pixar animators, honey, I'm sorry you had to animate that scene that the writers gave you. Like, that was almost Morbius levels of embarrassing writing. Like, I gotta say, yes. I hate to say it, but like, that level of writing is something I would expect from something like Venom or a Morbius. Like, guys, you have so many years to develop these movies. You have animators who are working on making these pristine back. Give them there's gotta be some other reason that you call yourself Zurg. Like, and a part of the problem is they couldn't introduce him until the last like 3 minutes of the movie. I know it wasn't actually 3 minutes, but I felt like it.
It feels like it's a red one. Never explained again.
I
expect this from Tom Hardy, and maybe a little better from Tom Hardy.
I mean, okay, like, I'm literally off the top of my head right now. Say Zurg is a title. Say Emperor Zurg is like the equivalent of Darth Vader, which
I don't think they say Emperor Zurg at any point. It's just Zurg.
I don't think they, so Zurg could not just an emperor mean, in this world. He's just a
Zurg
dude with a
mask. Just mean Emperor. Like, that could have been their out.
Right, that's right. That would actually be kind of dope, is that, like, if you think that Old Buzz is kind of a good guy for the first chunk, and then it's like, why do they call you Zurg? Oh, it means Emperor. Emperor? Oh, yeah, I kind of took over this planet in the future, and now I'm the Emperor, and you better do what I say.
Like, it would have made more sense.
This
villain makes no
idea. Right, we just came up with that. It's not perfect. I think we need to iron it out. There's some stuff there, but, like, it's better than, oh, they couldn't say Buzz, but they could say Zurg. Like,
okay,
and also, if the robots could only say Zurg, why would that mean that you have to be Zurg? Like, this is like the equivalent of if, like, in Star Wars, General Grievous had to go by Roger because all of his droids can only say Roger, Roger. Like, that's literally the equivalent. That's the equivalent of this. Like, just because the robots can only say Zurg does not mean you have to be called Zurg.
You could still call yourself Buzz.
Right, like every...
It's
just, like,
also a dumb name, but like...
Right, but like, it's also not like he's hiding. Like, it's not like he needed to go incognito and change his name. I mean, maybe there is some story for that, but we're given... It's another one of these Disney last-minute twist villains, which I think we both discussed as we're not being fans of because we like cool villains that are there for the whole time. But Old Buzz is a third-act villain. We don't even really know about Zurg, really, other than the fact that the robots say Zurg and we see his spaceship. So, like, there's really no menace.
We only know about Zurg as the audience watching this film having known anything about Buzz, which alludes me to the fact that this is an in-universe movie. Why would you like Zurg and want a toy of Zurg when he's a third-act villain with no explanation?
I will say I do like that they maintained in his design the, like, ping-pong ball rocket launcher type thing that he had.
That does matter.
It shoots lasers in the movie, not ping pong balls like the equivalent does in the toy. But I thought that was definitely one of those elements. Like, okay, this was something from the original world that we want to try to preserve. But like, they cared so little about so many preserving so much else that it's a little frustrating.
Yeah, I don't understand. When I think about it more, so little of Zurg's actions make sense in the film.
No,
like, why are you attacking? Immediately, like, I feel like this could have been a conversation.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean,
but
it's
like, part of it, I guess, was like he just was a self-centered narcissist. It's just such a poorly designed character. Also, what's up with the robot with one arm that seems like it's gonna have a vengeance arc, and then, like, we keep cutting back to it and it does nothing, I think.
Oh, Derek? The good robot?
Is he a good robot?
The scrappy one? Which one are you talking about?
No.
The
one-armed robot. The Zurg robot.
Yeah, no, he did nothing. I totally forgot about him.
We keep cutting back to him. Consistently.
Yeah.
And nothing happened. What is the point of that?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Best
Yeah, I mean,
character in the film, hands down though, that I feel like had a good story, I enjoyed watching, was Hawthorne. Not the young Hawthorne as much, the old Hawthorne.
Old Hawthorne had a good story. Too bad she's only in it for the first act.
Exactly. And that's the problem. The best character is only in it for so little. And then I don't really like the other one.
Like socks.
I like socks. I don't.
Yeah, young Hawthorne has a really weak story arc where like she's okay. You know how like in like old cartoons, by old I mean like our childhood cartoons, you'd have a character who was like defined by like I'm afraid of heights, and then in the end they have to do something that requires them to like go somewhere really high up and they're scared, but they do it anyway. That's kind of Alicia Hawthorne's
It's
whole arc.
such a one-dimensional arc.
Because we don't know why. So her thing is that she's scared of the void of space, which like cool.
Honestly,
And
cool.
that's
Yeah, I
cool.
get
Like
that.
I get it. I get being scared of the void. But when it's her main thing she needs to overcome, I would expect Pixar to give us more of a reason for why. Because she's been plant side her entire life. And I think if they'd given her more development, I think they could have come up with a very compelling reason. Like, oh, my grandmother, told me about wanting to go back to space, and I was scared that space would come and take my grandmother away. And I think that that could then, I think that, like, and that's like a childlike fear that she could even be like, yeah, like, I know it's kind of irrational. I know space isn't gonna come, but like, I'm scared of space to me means losing the people I love because I want to keep them here with me on this planet. That also ties into what becomes Buzz's arc, which is realizing that people want to stay on this planet and not go off, which I have issues with, and I have a script doctor for.
Why are
But
we not pitching actual movies at this point? And by that I mean, you write most of it, and I'm there to hear your ideas and tell you which ones are bad.
I think in order to I think go into both the stuff about the villain and also like my problems with the plot, like I think okay, so here's like a general summary of what happens in the movie. Buzz has PTSD after crashing the big spaceship into the Earth in an attempt, and not the Earth, the planet, in an attempt to get away from boring aliens who are trying to crash the ship. He is determined to get everyone off and rectify his mistake and redeem himself, which I think is a pretty good arc. Like I like that
Yeah.
it's decidedly his it's his
His
fault that they're on the planet. He
arc,
feels like
he has like a three-pronged, well, a two-pronged arc, all based off that mistake. It's one, the PTSD of it being his fault. Two, the need to rectify that by letting everyone get back to their lives on Earth, and space. And three, the giving up the, or realizing that he can accept help when it's needed. That's his three
Right.
prongs. That's really it.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I mean, I think the learn to work as a team is like pretty cliched and it didn't really need to be an element here, but whatever. Like
I don't need a partner. I
the
work
main
alone.
his right, his main arc I think is a little convoluted and difficult for kids to understand. So like I'm glad he had like a secondary arc that like kids could like actually relate to. So his main concern throughout the entirety of the movie is I gotta fix my mistake. He does it through the hyperspeed as we've been establishing. He's trying to create something that actually lets him go to hyperspeed, which is needed to actually make the jump into light speed, get to back to Earth, because they can't do it with the current speed. So he does that. Much time passes on Earth while he's doing these various basically test flights, trying to go faster. But as Katie said earlier, faster he goes in space, the more time is passing on Earth because of how relativity works, which I think that's mostly sound in terms of physics. I think that's pretty well established, not just in science, but also like in media. So I feel like that's, I have no problem with that as
No.
established. Like that makes sense to me as a consumer of sci-fi. I'm not a scientist, so I can't speak to how relativity actually works, but as a sci-fi enthusiast, it works. And of course, as a result, Buzz sees the people he loves on Earth pretty much just Hawthorne, because that's the only one we have time to establish he cares about. I really thought the rookie would come back. He like there's like this
He's
young
in
he's
like
referenced.
two background shots also.
Okay. I kind of thought like going into it, knowing that like some element from the trailers, knowing that some element was going to be time passing while he's doing his test flights. And when they first introduced the rookie, I'm like, oh, okay, so like this is gonna be how we mark that time passes because this kid's gonna go from being a kid to being older than Buzz. But we don't really see that, so kind of wasted opportunity there. But also, wasn't the rookie voiced by Bill Hader?
I believe so.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't get to do much. Like, what a waste of your Bill Hader. He sees, so Hawthorne grows old and dies. Hey, bigots, this is where you get your same-sex kiss, and it's vitally important to the plot because we need to see that Hawthorne Sr. has a delightful relationship with a woman, gets pregnant, has a kid, has a wonderfully fulfilling life that we see in a montage. I would like to have seen more of her life, but whatever. It's a good
Disney can
scene.
only give us so much.
Yeah, what it, so and not seeing much of Hawthorne, I think, goes to my main issue with how the rest of the movie progresses, because what Buzz's arc is meant to be by the time we get to his confrontation with Old Buzz, the thing that he is going to use to set him apart from Old Buzz, who is only concerned about fulfilling the mission and getting everyone home back to Earth, is that Buzz is supposed to learn that it's actually good that everyone is staying on the planet because, like Hawthorne, everyone is having lives and meeting people they wouldn't have otherwise met because the whole crew was meant to be cryogenically frozen. It was like just Hawthorne, Buzz, and the rookie who were meant to actually explore the planet. So, like, everyone who was frozen is having a life that they other like meeting people they otherwise would have just slept through. And I think that's a really interesting take. And I think it's a very sci-fi take. I think it's establishing colonies of hostile worlds is a very common sci-fi premise, and it's fun and it's interesting, and there's a lot that can be explored there. However, that little montage, which is shot in such a way that we only ever see Hawthorne's like bedroom, like her quarters, and which become her family's quarters. And it's an affecting montage. Like the way I wouldn't change the way they do that montage, but it is the only thing we see of this colony that they have created on this planet in the 100-odd years that Buzz is doing his test flights and dilating time so that he's missing most of it. And as a result, you would think the kind of obvious way to go would be to make him a Captain America style man out of time. He has missed most of this civilization's progress over at least 3 generations. And he is, you know, when he has his big confrontation with Buzz, old Buzz, Zurg, not Zurg. I'm gonna call him Roger now because I really like the image of General Grievous going by Roger Roger. So when he talks to Roger, and Roger's like, oh, we're gonna go back in time, we're gonna fix things. And Buzz is like, but wait, like, what about my new buddies, my scrappy underdogs, including the granddaughter of my friend? Like, they won't exist. And like, I think that's a logical conclusion, but we don't really feel anything about like that because we don't see the colony. We see some spaceships, we see their like very Spartan living quarters. We don't have really any indication that they want to stay on this planet and aren't still looking to get to Earth. The closest thing is that we have like the main general guy who comes in and tells Buzz, we're not doing space flights anymore because we're just gonna stay here. And it kind of,
Laser shield.
I like Laser Shield, that's pretty fun. He has a fun delivery on that line. But that to me, at least in that moment, came across much less as, oh, we're happy here. Like, we don't really feel the need to leave. Like, this world is a paradise. That came across as like, we're out of money and resources and we're just resigned to our fate. Like that didn't strike me as like a positive thing at all, or even that they believed it was a positive thing. And to me, that just means my script doctor, I think, is very easy. I think we're missing 3 minutes, possibly. We need a scene and a half showing Buzz trying to acclimate to this strange new world, Captain America style, that he has been missing because he's been so focused on his mission. He has literally missed 3 generations of life on this planet. And have the opportunity to see him not being totally comfortable with it, to see that PTSD and doubt getting in the way of him having what might be a happy life. Maybe he's given the opportunity to retire. Maybe he's being told, hey, we have other test pilots who can do this. You've done enough. Settle down and start a family. And he says, no, I have to keep going. I have to fix my mistake. We don't have any indication that this planet is something worth saving. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about for all that Pixar is very good at creating worlds that we have attachments to, do we even know the name of this planet?
Nope.
Like, I think it's like given a number at the beginning as like a lower third. We don't even know the name of their colony. Like, they might have named it New Earth. We don't know. Like, we know nothing about this space. And yet it is crucial in the climax that Buzz says, no, I'm not going to keep bringing everyone. I'm not going to go back in time and change this. This place is worth protecting. These lives, I want everyone to stay here and not bring everyone back to Earth. Because, I mean, yeah, it's you know, obviously what Zurg's plan or Roger's plan, so I'm going to stick to my bit, with the villain's plan would, you know, erase all the children. But to be fair, Zurg then does make the convincing argument, like, no one can miss what they didn't have. If I change time, it's not a problem. Also, I think the time travel stuff gets weird here, because, like, I think we're doing alternate timeline style time.
Exactly. Like, it makes
no sense.
We're not doing
Back to the Future. We're not doing Back to the Future style time travel where, like, you change the past. Like, I think it's different timelines is the kind of vibe they're going for. So I don't think that there is a world in which they destroy the lives that are already there. I mean, I think the way it works, honestly, is that Roger could have just, you know, done whatever science he needed to get everyone off the current planet and bring them to Earth, like, if that's what was so desired. And we're not given any indication that that's not desired. Like, if Zurg, Roger, Buzz shows up from space and says, yo, I figured out a way to bring everyone home, I don't think there's any world in which we've been shown that they wouldn't see that as a good thing. But the plot requires us to think that it wouldn't be, that everyone is happy where they are. And then by the end of the movie, they're content to stay on the planet and they're just going to send out new space rangers and they're going to, you know, do the, you know, boldly go where no man has gone before exploration style Star Trek, which is like a delightful positive ending. But like only if we really think that these guys are happy on this planet. And again, it's shown to be a pretty barren, hostile planet. Maybe they do want to leave. Like, you know, obviously they're making the best of a bad situation, but like, I don't know, Buzz, maybe you do still need to fix your mistake and get everyone back to Earth. Like, if I'm leaving this movie thinking that the character learned the wrong lesson from the movie, maybe they didn't develop the plot that well.
I just had another thing of something that's in the plot and a crucial thing that we have so little understanding of.
Yeah.
And this is, again, coming from why I might like this Buzz Lightyear Space Command better. Never in this movie is it explained what Space Rangers do.
We have no idea. They just, again, I think it's just a Star Trek thing. They just explore. They're not the Green Lantern Corps like they were in Buzz Lightyear of Star Command, to be sure.
Which is fun.
It's fun, yeah. I mean, I can see why in 2022 they would lean away from the space cop angle, to be fair. Like,
yes.
I think there's already some kind of gross colonialist vibes happening here, which is maybe
true.
Also partially why they went with like an objectively ugly looking hostile planet. Like, this isn't like they landed in Pandora and we're like, we have to feel feelings about them colonizing it. Like, they've purposefully made it look so terrible that like we want to get off this rock, but then we're stuck on this rock. Like, and that
yeah.
might have been an interesting plot of them learning to live with the natives in peace and harmony, but like that would have required them to like write a sensitive, complicated story.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's coming from this is there's so little development of details in the story. You're left with a lot of questions of, wait, what's this? How does this work? What?
And I think it's not really just the plot holes that bothers me, because like a lot of Pixar movies have plot holes. Like, that's like the classic one, of course, is in Toy Story. You know, if Buzz thinks he's a toy, if Buzz doesn't think he's a toy, why does he freeze when the humans enter? Like, there are plot holes in Pixar movies that we ignore because the rest of the movie is good. Here, it's not just that it's plot hole, it just strikes me as laziness. Like, things like the Zurg thing are lazy. Having old Buzz be your third act villain without any real setup is lazy. Having him just yada yada yada, oh, I picked up cool stuff from space and I discovered time travel somehow, is lazy. There's a lot of laziness in this movie that Pixar is not known for. Like, other studios turn out lazy projects all the time. Even bad Pixar movies, I don't find lazy. I think some of them, like the Cars movies, might be a bit derivative. Something like Good Dinosaur might be simple, but I wouldn't really classify any of them as lazy in quite the same way that Lightyear feels lazy. And there's like so many things that we're like even talk about here, like little changes that would make it better. Like, for example, they have this whole sequence in later in the movie when Buzz is bonding with the scrappy underdog. So I feel like we've barely talked about, even though they're a huge part of the movie, but they're kind of boring and they don't really matter to the plot. So what does it matter? But there's a whole like sequence where like they're eating sandwiches, and we discover that in this world now, over the 100 years, they're eating sandwiches with the meat on the outside and bread on the inside. I'm like, well, that's kind of a fun detail. And
Yeah.
yeah, kidding.
Yeah, that's a really fun detail of how things are different and how things have changed. Also, that was maybe the most grossly realistic scene in the film.
It was the sound mixing. It was the editing. It was the
No,
sound. I could
it was
hear the
how.
finger squishing into the bologna. I didn't
It
like
was also
that.
how wet the ham looked. Like
Very
the
wet.
glistening ham, it looked too realistic in
But
this
like
film.
I liked that because I think it spoke to Buzz's argument that like, no, this is wrong. Like, you're doing this wrong. And I think that they should, and here's part of my script doctor, that should have been something that was established much earlier. In that little period before he does his second jump, he does like a lot of smaller jumps, and then one big jump that gets him into like the bad future where there's like Zerg robots everywhere. I think that it would have made what was just sort of a throwaway gag that came in like toward the end of the second act, I think should have been a late first act thing that is both a funny visual and you could have basically all the same jokes, but I think it speaks more to this world has evolved without you, and things. It reminds me of that quote from The Simpsons, the grandpa quote, like, I used to be with it, then they changed what it was, and now what's it is weird and scary to me. It will happen to you. Like, I feel like that's, I mean, old Buzz is kind of just a boomer who doesn't understand that things have changed and people like things that he finds weird now, in this case, staying on the planet. And I think that would be a really, like, it's objectively wrong to eat a sandwich like that. Like, from our perspective, from we as the audience, like, these people are doing it backwards. But I think it would be a good representation of how what is our knee-jerk reaction, which is they need to get off this planet, might also be wrong. Like, they might be perfectly content with their own weird way of doing things that has evolved beyond what Earth is. And Buzz needs to learn to accept that, but instead it's just kind of a funny gag in the second act, and I think it could have been something much more poignant had they really thought about it a little extra second.
Okay. I have an update on some earlier things we said about how this fits into the universe and if Star Command is still canon. I
They do
have quotes
reference
from the
Mars.
director.
Okay.
Yes, but I have quotes from the director now that I just found while looking to see what else was happening. Do-do-do-do. He always picked. He didn't have it in mind while making this film, but he always pictured the series being developed after an. In-universe after a trilogy of Lightyear films. He explained that the Lightyear series serves as a live-action film within the universe, whereas Star Command is a hand-drawn series based on the anime on the film, and that's from which the toys are derived. Now, I have a lot of questions because these are not compatible in some ways with the Zerg reveal, but.
But also, if that was the intention, then the opening like title card, which was in 1995, Andy saw a movie that made him want to buy a Buzz Lightyear toy. This is that movie. That's not what this guy just said.
I know. Now I'm more confused. I'm sorry to interrupt with this very not tangential
It's great.
development. But also, yeah, I really don't get it with the Zerg reveal that these two things being compatible media also. Zerg is a very different villain in the show.
Well, Zerg exists in the show. Like, I can't
Yeah.
imagine who would have been the villain in this fictional live-action Star Command series
Yeah, because Zerg's pretty dead at the end of this movie.
He sure is. Yeah, I mean, and also not Zerg. Like, it's
Yeah.
so weird because like I feel like we have this problem with like villains not keeping their iconic masks on, or even heroes not keeping their iconic masks on in live-action movies, but like Old Buzz doesn't have that problem because he's not an actor with an ego. He's an animated character. Why is he wearing his mask so little? I swear to God, the Zerg mask has like 20 seconds of screen time in this whole movie. And it's a really cool looking mask.
It's a really cool design.
Like he's barely like, and there's not even really a Zerg presence. Like I feel like in movies like this, where like for whatever reason you want to keep your protagonist from meeting your villain until the third act, which in general I think is a bad idea. It like almost never leads to a compelling villain protagonist relationship. But if you are gonna do that, they should at least build up like some of the fear of Zerg throughout. And like I think maybe they cut to him like once, but like he's in like in shadow or it's like not really clear, like. There could have been ways to build up the menace of Zerg, but they don't really do it. Like they have like one or two cuts to him, but you don't really
He's
see
not even
him.
much of a villain in a lot of like he's somewhat of a villain, but as soon as they do the reveal, it's just kind of like, well, this is anticlimactic for what's been happening.
They get rid of him so fast. Like the main plot of the movie is they're trying to destroy the big ship because that will kill all the robots and stop them from attacking the civilization they've created here, which is fair and fine, but it's also kind of like a video game style, like, you know, quest to destroy something. Like, we don't really know much about the bad guys other than it's just like they're evil robots. Like, there's no sense of, you know,
I
there
have
are
played
stakes.
sci-fi mo video games with more plot development than this movie.
I would, and not playing video games, I would say so. Like, right. Like, it's just, there's really not like a ticking clock that I know of. It's more just like, we gotta, well, no, I guess there kind of is because they're gonna break through the shield eventually.
But it doesn't seem like they're making any progress, is the thing, when we cut to it once.
Right, there's really no sense of urgency. We don't go back inside the dome and see like the people being
Also, like,
scared.
here's the
Like,
thing. Like, I get that Zerg was always going to be the villain, but they also, like, kind of red herring, but also didn't red herring that the cap, like, the new commander was going to be an issue.
because he's just like your standard evil, well, not
Who we,
evil, just like
by the way,
bad
never met
sci-fi.
before. Like,
Who
why would, what,
yeah.
we never
You know
met
what I
him in the
mean?
previous thing. He should have been somewhere in there. We should have gotten some of him in a background shot. I got a lot of feelings about this film.
Yeah, I mean, right. The commander is just kind of your standard, like, you're out of line, Buzz. I ought to court martial you. You're not doing things by the book. Like, he's
And
that
then he
very
had that
standard
change of
character.
heart at the end, which, fine.
Right. Like, it's not, it's right. It's nothing. It's nothing special. And I really hate these third act twist villains. And to be fair, Pixar does it a lot. And I think it rarely works. The only time I can think about it really being to the film's benefit has been I forget the name of the villain even, so okay, it clearly can't be that great, but the guy from Up. I thought that was a good, and I think that worked because it was a twist that he was the villain, but his character was essential to establishing the relationship between Carl and Ellie early in the movie. So it didn't feel like he was a third act twist villain who we just met. It felt like a great betrayal to what these characters liked. And honestly, I think he came in sooner than the third act. I think he was somewhere in around the midpoint in any case. But yeah, Zurg comes in very late in this movie. There's no urgent, like the twist that it is Buzz doesn't feel like the big dramatic. Honestly, it felt like a bigger twist in Toy Story 2 when they just repeated the line from Star Wars and they were toys. Like that felt like it had more stakes because we'd set up Zurg tracking Buzz and Zurg being Buzz's mortal enemy. Like that had been set up. So it was a legitimate twist and betrayal when Zurg said, "I am your father." Like, again, even though it was ridiculous, even though we knew it was just a reference, even though we know that these are plastic toys who don't have fathers, that felt more earned for the characters because there was an established history between the two, versus there is maybe 5 seconds between Buzz seeing Zurg and Buzz learning that it's an older version of himself. Now they do make the joke. He does say, like, my father? And he's like, no, I'm older you. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, and that just kind of pissed me off a little bit because, like, They knew that there was a lore there. They knew what had been established in Toy Story 2, and they're just willingly throwing that canon away. Boo, Pixar. You could have been a little more creative.
Yeah, no, I think this, I don't know if you have more you want to talk about or if
I feel like I've yelled and ranted about this enough. I would like to clarify, I didn't hate this movie. Like,
no,
it's okay.
I don't.
It is perfectly mediocre.
It's mediocre, and I don't have a desire to watch it again. Whereas now I have a desire to watch Toy Story 2 again because it is the best Toy Story film.
Yeah, I really want to watch Toy Story 2 again. I might rewatch that tonight just for the funsies of it.
Yeah,
it's a really good
movie. It's a really good one.
Just to cry. Like, I didn't cry at this movie, you know? I mean, most Pixar movies will get a tear out of me. Hawthorne dying early on, just growing old and having like kind of a sad final goodbye to Buzz, that like, you know, choked me up a little bit, but like Hawthorne. Like she was great. I love her family, what little we see of them. Her wife doesn't say a word, so that's kind of a shame. Does it count? Does this count as bury your gaze? Is this in that? I don't know if it counts if they die of old age. Also, I don't know if they pass the Bechdel test for what it's worth. I mean, well, no, because old lady is like scrappy underdog character, the one who was like a convict. Does she talk to Alicia? I don't know if she talks to Alicia. I don't know if they share.
But here's the thing: I'm not 100% if Darby's a man or a woman most of the film.
Oh, wait, is that one not? I thought that they were a woman, but I'm not positive.
They're voiced by an actress, so
okay.
Maybe. But I gotta say, like, it's very unclear in the character's life, which I'm fine with. I'm just saying, I can't tell you if it passed the Bechdel test.
I mean, I don't have a problem with androgynous characters, clearly. I have a problem with underdeveloped characters, and if we don't even know what gender is, that does sort of indicate that they didn't get a lot of talking screen time to develop their character.
Otherwise. I had a wrap-up point, and now you've kicked it down the road.
Sorry.
I can.
I do love socks.
I did get a little... Socks had like 3 jokes that got a little repetitive, but overall, very enjoyable.
I mean, unfortunately, the best Socks joke is the one that was in the trailer where he does the white noise to help Buzz sleep. Like, it's a shame that that was the best one because it was the one we'd already seen and we're expecting. And that was... That was a lot more just coming through in the timing of the animation. Like, well done, guys. Perfect comedic timing there.
Yes. I remember my wrap-up point. I, in some ways, hope that this film, and it's probably poor, probably not going to meet its, recoup its budget, is a moment where Disney finally realizes it can't force any more Toy Story milking out of Pixar, because I think one of the great things about Pixar is that they have sequels for a couple films, but there's also a lot of films that are just one-offs, and those are some of the really good films.
Yeah.
I would like Disney to let Pixar have more creative freedom to get away from the series that it has milked for all sorts, because clearly this one did not get what it wanted out of it.
Right. And they can't blame the pandemic. They can't They can't even blame other kids' movies being out at the time because they were going up against Jurassic World and Top Gun, both of which have appeal for children, but like they released it at the correct time in a period of the year that other Pixar movies have done very well. I think Inside Out came out alongside Jurassic World in June of 2015, if I
we'll
recall
to...
correctly. I might be misremembering the timeline there, but I think that might be it.
People are going, like, you can't, with the pandemic, like, you can't say people aren't going to the theater now, because Top Gun has shown people are going to the theater again.
And Jurassic World made a ton of money this past weekend. Like,
I don't want to talk about the dinosaur movie and the actor I don't like.
Oh no, but yeah. So that is clearly not an issue. I would really, in my perfect world, I want Disney execs and Pixar execs to look at what happened in this first half of the year 2022 and look at Turning Red which they didn't give a theatrical to, but did gangbusters on Disney Plus, was a big part of the social media conversation, had huge levels of memes. And I was at Disneyland the other weekend, and there was a little girl, and she was carrying a little red panda toy from Turning Red, which she clearly just bought like at the park. And we were online for the Ferris wheel, and the Ferris wheel at Disneyland, for those who don't know, is decorated with Pixar characters. And she looked up at one of them and pointed at the one that was a panda from Turning Red. She's like, "Look, Mom, look, they have Turning Red on the wheel now." And she was so excited just to see an image of the panda from Turning Red of May as in her red panda form. And she was so excited by it. And that's lovely. And I think that that really indicates how much people responded to Turning Red, the kind of movie which 100% needed to be animated. There was no world in which that kind of story makes sense in live action, which was
No.
focused on girls, which had amazing diversity. And I was just in so many ways the superior movie to Lightyear. Lightyear they put in theaters, and they're gonna lose money on it. Like it's pretty apparent at this point that barring an absolute miracle, Lightyear will be a net loss for Pixar. Possibly one of their few net losses. I think Onward, I think, might have also done pretty poorly, but that was
And that came
because it
out
came
at a
out a
bad
week.
time, if I
It came
remember.
out a week before the pandemic started.
Yeah.
Like
I couldn't remember if
it's
it came out
not
like
fair.
the week after or the week before, because we
It
didn't
was
see that in theaters. We watched
the
that on
last
Disney
movie.
Plus.
It was the last movie I saw in theaters. You know, it's like
Yeah.
you kind of remember that now. The last movie you saw in theaters before the pandemic started. Onward was my last movie before the pandemic started.
I'd have to dig back, but I'm pretty sure it was a terrible one to have seen last.
Oh no. Was it Invisible Man? Because that was one I wanted to see in
No. God, I don't see horrible, horrible movies.
Hey, that was a good movie.
Not horrible movies, horror movies is what I was
Oh, okay.
meaning
I
to
thought you said
say.
horrible. I'm like, hey, wait a
I might
minute.
have said horrible by accident. I meant horror movies.
That's fair.
I'm
But
trying to get
yeah.
the net losses of Pixar.
Right. I mean, generally their movies do pretty well. And this isn't, I don't think, I've seen people call it a flop and a bomb. I don't think it will technically qualify for being a flop or a bomb. I don't think it will make its money back, especially when you add in the marketing budget. I think it will come close to breaking even, but not fully do it. I think they'll lose money on this.
Okay. Onward made 103.
That's not great. But yeah, again, like before the pandemic. When does it say when it was
Yeah.
released?
I'll get there. Onward budget was 175 to 200, so it was a loss.
That's a pretty serious loss for Onward.
It is not the worst
However,
one though.
oh, it was who? Can I guess Good Dinosaur is the worst?
That is not the worst.
Oh.
Onward released February 21st, 2020.
Yeah, that's not great. It had a solid 2 weeks before people were being advised to stay away from movie theaters. Also, I feel like February is a bad time for that movie to be released in general. I don't know what they were thinking releasing a Pixar movie in February.
The worst one is one that got the worst timing, and that is Soul. It cost $150 million to make, and because it was the one that was scheduled to come out mid-pandemic that year, it only ended up making $3 million.
Well, that also was a Disney Plus release. So, like, yeah,
Because they
that
couldn't
probably.
release it in theaters was the thing. Oh,
Right.
sorry, it made $7 million. So,
Yeah, that makes sense. So
Good
I feel
Dinosaur
like
is the other one. It is a financial disappointment, apparently. It lost around $85 million in marketing cost.
I
It
think
made
good
$332 million.
I think Good Dinosaur would be the more fair comparison. I don't think it's fair to compare Lightyear to Onward or
No.
Soul or Luca, like
Because
all these movies.
I brought those up
Yeah.
because those are
No, of
ones that
course.
unfortunately had timing. Good Dinosaurs, they're possibly only lost. I would have to do research to how much they put into marketing of Bug's Life and stuff, because Bug's Life got 363 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very possible that Lightyear is, you know, when accounting for all these other, you know, all the other issues with the pandemic, that again, it's not really fair to compare to. I think Lightyear might be their biggest disappointment yet. And
Yeah.
I hope that the lesson they're learning is to look at these two movies and to say something about Lightyear is not drawing crowds. It is, and perhaps it is because it does not feel like the kind of animation that we want from Pixar, the kind of worlds we want to see, the kind of characters we want to see. Perhaps it's that we don't like spin-offs. Perhaps it's we don't like this photorealistic type style of animation. I think there's a lot that they can learn from this moment.
I think they just need to put more effort into writing. It's
yeah, this feels
really
like
bland. Really bland and underdeveloped. They didn't put the time into the story. They put all their time into the technical things. But you can't carry a movie designed... here's the thing. We, as people who have spent a lot of time studying film and the technical aspects of film and how it's developed, have a great ability to appreciate the effort it takes to make a movie look that nice and the technical innovations it's coming with. The general audience is never going to be carried by technical marvels alone. You need a story to back that up.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they just learned the wrong lesson from the Lion King remake doing like insanely well at the box office. I think they need to accept that that was a little bit of fluke and a little bit due to the fact that everyone loves the original Lion King so much. And we hadn't been saturated with it the same way we have with Toy Story films. Like, I think perhaps if there hadn't been Toy Story 3 and 4 and this movie still came out when it did, more people might have flocked to it being like, oh my God, finally, more Toy Story. But we just had Toy Story 4 a few years ago and Toy Story 4 was just kind of fine. I was surprised to see it has a really high score on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's like 97 because I've never heard anyone say it's one of their favorite Pixar movies. Like, I've only ever really heard people say like, yeah, that was pretty good. Like, I think pretty good is the most praise I've ever heard for Toy Story 4.
It was pretty good.
With that in mind, I think maybe the Toy Story franchise is kind of tapped for now. I think, you know, maybe there's another well they have to go to, or like you said, maybe they should just focus on the original stories for now, because clearly this was not what they wanted. This was not.
I would say overall, we've seen, my final closing remarks, I guess, because this is a long episode for us in a while. Is we've seen Pixar churn out several sequels, prequels lately. And I would say in the vast majority of them, the nostalgia doesn't carry the film. And that's what they're relying on. Is there a Pixar sequel, barring Toy Story 2, which we agree is better than the first one?
Yes.
A sequel that holds up better than the original?
Better? No, I think it's just Toy Story 2. And I mean, to be fair, the original Toy Story is also fantastic. So it's really incredible they managed to eke slightly above that. I think in general, they've all been lesser. I was pleasantly surprised by Finding Dory, I will say. Mm-hmm. I think people are, I don't think it is better by any stretch of the imagination. I think it is a higher tier Pixar movie than any of the other sequels other than Toy Story 2. I think Finding Dory did what I think a good sequel does, which is give a different perspective on a character mm-hmm. and make you and teach you a different sort of lesson or a different sort of story. Mm-hmm. So that I like about Finding Dory versus some of the other sequels, which are just kind of the same story. Monster University, I think, had potential that they squandered, so that's a shame. Like, there's a really good third act there, which is surprising for Pixar movies, which generally have weaker third acts. And the first two acts are just Animal House, but make it G-rated, which is weird. Lightyear is in that weird case where it's a spin-off, not a sequel, so it's weird to even compare it to the Toy Story movies, but, like, no question. All four Toy Story movies are better than this, like, by leaps and bounds. So, yeah, I guess if my final thoughts to wrap up is, you know, see Lightyear if you're a Pixar completionist, if you have time. It's, you know, you're not going to have a bad time, but it is a disappointment from Pixar.
If you're a person who appreciates the technical aspects of cinema, it is enjoyable in that regard. You are going to see a technical marvel. This is something that's going to be looked at in film school in terms of animation. It's not going to be the film school animation thing of like, here's WALL-E, considered one of the best animation stories and stuff, and using animation to progress the story. I go in with low expectations of the story.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair to say. All right, well, I think, as Katie said, this is one of our longer episodes, so we'll go ahead and wrap this up. We've talked a great deal.
We have a lot of feelings.
We have a lot of feelings. So we're going to pop back into our cartoon time machine, which we've also established very little about how it works. So I guess we're being really hypocritical when we criticize how this movie talks about time travel.
We don't, well, I guess we do use time travel. I was going to say, we don't time travel. That's an action lie.
Our characters, in universe, Katie, we time travel. You and me as the people don't time travel, but the internal lore is that we time travel. Just like how the internal lore of this movie is that it's a movie in a movie. See?
God, I think they lost so much in the movie in a movie. Sign us out before my brain hurts.
I'll sign us out before we find something else to talk about. I'm Scarlett.
And I'm Katie.
We're your animates, and we will see you next time. To infinity and beyond!